Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Through the roof. Today I am speaking with Dee Dee Cheney. Hello, Dee Dee.
Hi there.
A little introduction about Dee Dee. So Dee Dee is a folklore curator and freelance writer and freelance content manager. She has a postgraduate degree in archaeology. She is the co-founder of the hashtag Folklore Thursday, which is massive on Twitter. She's now living in Turin, and her latest book, Maypoles, Mandrakes and Mistletoe, A Treasury of British Folklore, will be out in April 2018 through National Trust Books. Welcome to the show, Dee Dee, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so what I'd like to do to start off with is do a few kind of warm-up questions. So, you know, some kind of side bends, toe touches, you know, running on the spot. get you all limbered up.
Just how I like to start the day.
Oh, absolutely. So what is your favourite time to write?
Well, I think that really depends on the project. I do really work on a project by project basis. I obviously do writing in my spare time as well. But if I'm working with a specific book, I kind of gear myself towards that book and work around that. With the book I've just done for the National Trust, I generally spent every morning writing, which I think it was a really good way for me to do it, because I find I go into a kind of headspace when I write and I'm really not good for distractions. Mm. So I kind of tend to, you know, grab the coffee, switch on the laptop and then kind of go into a bit of a zone. So I find doing that in the mornings was really great, because there aren't a lot of distractions if you start first thing. I tend to have so many to-do lists, and there's always a million emails and huge lists of stuff that I have to do every single day. So if I get the writing out of the way first, without looking at the emails and without looking at the to-do list, then I find I can really focus. Whereas if I do it the other way around, the to-do list just goes on and on and on, and then it's like you end up writing well into the night, because that's the only time you have left in the day. Mm. So, yeah, I find getting it out the way first when there's clear space is always the best thing for me.
Mm. And what's your favourite form of writing?
I think that's a really difficult one, actually. I'd say a little of both, but for very different things. Mm. I do enjoy long projects, because you get to really mull over an idea and really look at it in depth. And, you know, you kind of think about it when you're on a bus or a train or in the bath, or, you know, those kind of things. And you can really kind of mull over it and see how you feel about the different themes mm-hmm. at different times. And the way I write, I do kind of, you know, I write and I do the work and the research and stuff, but now and then you do come up with kind of like the genius idea and the spark hits you, which I don't think you can really get with short projects, because you don't have that luxury of mulling over it. I do think, though, with the longer projects, it's so easy to become kind of disillusioned and stressed, because sometimes it feels like they're never going to end. But I think the deadlines are really useful for that, because in those moments where you're thinking, oh my God, you know, it's never going to end, the pressure of that deadline really spurs you on and keeps you going. Mm-hmm. But again, with the short pieces like blog posts, like I write for Folklore Thursday, you know, articles like that, and I do write short stories as well, just for fun. It's really nice to do the short ones too, because you can explore a topic without really committing to it too much. and it doesn't require quite as much research. So it's nice to just dip into the different topics now and then, without having to have that pressure of working them into a longer piece.
Mm.
So I think both are really fun for different reasons.
And you've also done some content writing as well. So I imagine that that would be quite short too.
Yeah, I do think the shortest writing I've ever done. I've worked on different projects on lots of different scales, but I think the shortest thing I've ever done was kind of like product descriptions.
Mm.
And that's a very weird thing to do, because especially if it's a website that's selling the same things, and you have to write really exciting descriptions in really short sentences for the same thing over and over again. You know, so you have to be really creative then. It's quite intense, but it can be quite fun as well, because you think, you know, I need to be really creative with this and really engage people. So it was interesting. It was only a short project I did, thankfully. But that was kind of fun. And then another one I did was article writing for like wiki style
mm-hmm.
sites, where it was one of my favourite topics of travel. So there were just really short 500-word articles on all different aspects of travel. So that was really exciting too. You know, things like Christmas markets and the best way to get trains in the Netherlands and things like that. So that was really fun.
Cool. Okay, so you mentioned coffee. So what is your writing fuel of choice? Is it coffee?
It is coffee, but I'll admit anything with an instant hit, really, although I'm not sure I should admit that. Coffee, chocolate, and I have developed an absolute penchant for like French patisseries, particularly entremets. I think that's how you pronounce it. They're kind of like these really little gâteaux, one-person gâteaux, and I discovered these in Alsace in the local bakery in the middle of nowhere. So I don't know who was even buying these things, because they were kind of something you'd find in Paris.
Mm.
But you'd drive for ages through fields and little villages just to discover the most amazing cakes. So what I'm actually trying to do is, instead of eating the cake and the chocolate, sometimes I start the day by looking at pictures of entremets, which seems to have the same effect. That works quite well. So, and Carrie Ann Noble's Instagram feed has been an absolute dream to follow, because she does a lot of cakes and tea parties. So yeah. I feel a bit like she's a kindred spirit in some way.
So your writing fuel is Instagram pictures of cake.
Yes, probably. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So let's move on a little more in depth. So how do you describe your writing, and what themes do you like to explore?
Okay, well, I think my natural writing style is quite whimsical. And I think that probably goes too far sometimes, you know, where you can go off on a tangent and just explore all of these profound themes, and then you realize you're writing an article about something quite factual and specific, so you need to really edit that down. But luckily that really lends itself to folklore, which is one of the topics I deal with more than others. And within folklore, obviously I have my personal favorites. I do quite like dark folklore, which does come up quite a lot on Folklore Thursday, and I think a lot of the articles I've done for the Folklore Thursday website have been quite dark, like Krampus, who's almost like the Christmas devil of, you know, the Alpine regions, and the Hand of Glory. I find those kind of things fascinating. I think people probably find that a little bit creepy and surprising, but I just think it's because they're such shocking things that we don't really deal with today in any great length, at least in this part of the world. You know, it's quite dark. It's quite horrifying when you think how these types of traditions were such a normal part of life. Oh, you know, I've got this issue. Oh, you need the hand of a dead man for that. I think that's a normal thing. It's quite shocking. You know, researching that, you know, I think people think, oh, she must be really the proper goth and really, you know, moaning all the time and really dark. But I think I just find it so shocking. It's like people really did these things and they really thought that it wasn't okay. And I think I just find that so shocking.
I'm amazed also when I have a look, delve into this stuff, and I haven't anywhere near as much as you have, but how sanitized, you know, our stories are today compared to the stuff that, you know, things like Krampus.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. There's actually an article coming out in December from Marcus about his Christmas traditions. That's in the Swedish tradition. Mm-hmm. So do look out for that. But honestly, it's a little bit like Krampus. But it just sounds like the traditions that people have in some parts of the world terrify the children. You know, you see the videos of the children with Krampus and you think, I think I would have been scarred for life. It's amazing, you know, how people get used to so many different things just because it's part of their culture. And you think, my culture is so far removed from that. And I just find it fantastic.
But is your culture that far removed from it? Or is it that they're not spoken about anymore, but, you know, part of Folklore Thursday is to just kind of delve and dig a little bit, and it's still there, isn't it, underneath?
That's a huge, huge question. And that's one that I need to think about in the bath, actually. But yes, you're probably right. I mean, I think on the surface, there was no Krampus. Krampus was never coming for me when I was a child. Mm. But I suppose, yeah, I suppose in British culture, at least, yeah, there are pretty dark things there as well, really, when you think about it. I mean, I always found the Tooth Fairy quite fascinating. That's such a creepy idea. You know, it's like, oh, the lovely little Tooth Fairy, she's coming to collect your teeth. But then when you reframe that, that's kind of like, there's a woman who's going to creep into your bedroom at night when you're asleep, and without you realising, she's going to take some of your body parts from your bed. And you think, that's not a pretty story, is it? That's quite creepy.
And what does she do with them all?
Oh, do you not have the Tooth Fairy?
No. What does she do with all the teeth that she collects?
Who knows? There are so many stories that have come from the Tooth Fairy, and it's like, oh, actually, it's dark magic. She's collecting them for some kind of old blood ritual where she steals your soul. And, you know, like the Hogfather and all that kind of stuff from Terry Pratchett. In actual folklore, what does she do with the teeth? I don't know. I don't think that's part of the folklore. I'm going to have to go and have a look at that. Really disturbing.
So before we go off, like, completely off topic and not talk about writing, let's do... No. You know I love this stuff as well. So if we're talking about writing and you as a non-fiction writer, so what was the one thing that you think that has been most helpful in improving your writing?
Okay, apart from the pictures of cake, I think in essence, I've made some notes here, but I think in essence what it comes down to is confidence. Having confidence in your writing is a huge thing. And I think you see so many people on social media saying, you know, it's okay if I write something badly. You know, it's okay if it's not perfect. I need more confidence. And I think that's so true. But in terms of a tangible way of dealing with that, there's not a lot out there to build your confidence other than just write. And I think, you know, you can get all the feedback in the world, but there's always going to be good feedback. There's always going to be negative feedback because it's a very subjective thing. So I think one really tangible way that I overcame having confidence in my writing and that being a major issue is not to keep rewriting sections. I think if you have a plan, which you obviously do mostly with nonfiction, just get up every day and write. write something, and I used to write 500 words a day for fiction, and I think that would also carry over to non-fiction as well. If you're not on a deadline, just get up every day and write something, and don't keep rewriting the same piece. Once you've written a section, just move on and accept that it's not perfect. There are going to be bits that are absolutely horrendous, and you're going to be screaming at the walls that you've written something so terrible, but really just write through that and accept that that section can be revisited later and fixed later when you're in a better mood, when you're less stressed, when you have more time. Whatever the reason is, you can always come back and edit that later. So I think the main thing that I've learned is just get the first draft down, and then that sense of achievement will keep you going, because having a few perfect words is also quite soul-destroying, in the same way that having a whole draft of not-so-perfect words can be. But at least you'll have that full draft, and you'll have something that you can really work with in a really concrete way. And I think that builds confidence, because it feels like such an achievement when you have that draft. And once the pressure of that has gone, you can see the writing a lot more clearly, and it doesn't seem so bad after that at the end. And then you can really just work on making it better.
So would that be also gaining confidence through putting your writing out there? So submitting it or getting feedback?
I'm not sure. I will admit, I'm quite an irritable person. You might not have noticed. So getting feedback, I think, has been a really difficult process for me to come to terms with. Because obviously feedback is meant to help you. And, you know, there's always like some positives. And I think the best people to give feedback have that kind of sandwich technique, where it's, you know, give something positive, then give something negative, and then end on something positive again. And I think that's the easiest type of feedback to deal with. But I think a lot of people aren't so great at giving feedback, and they just come along and they rip your work to bits. And then that can almost have the opposite effect, I think.
Mm.
And it can be quite negative in some ways, where, you know, you just feel like, oh my God, I'm so rubbish at this. And, you know, and I think maybe in another sense, that's quite a positive thing as well, because if you can get up the next day and carry on in the face of that, I suppose you'd call that character building, and say, you know, that really does build confidence in your writing, because you get up and you realise you're writing for you. Mm. And if you're writing for you, there will be other people out there who will like what you're writing too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's both positive and negative, putting your writing out there. But at the end of the day, it is something you have to do as a writer, and you have to come to terms with the fact that one day somebody's going to read what you write. And realistically, I think a lot of writers don't face up to that.
Mm.
I think it's really easy to just write and write and write, and then you think, oh God, someone's going to have to read this now.
Mm.
And it's quite a strange and emotional experience when somebody does read something for the first time.
Mm.
But I think it's really important to have the confidence to accept their opinion, whether it's positive or negative or both, and then recognise that you're still writing for you at the end of the day.
Mm.
And whatever you write, that's okay. And it's your voice. And as long as you're being honest with yourself about what you're writing, and honest with your writing, I don't think you should change that just because somebody says it's not quite their style.
Mm.
I think it's important to respond to the more minor things, like, you know, you could phrase this better, you could build up to this in a more positive way, and, you know, those kind of things. That kind of feedback's really important, and it's really good to get somebody to look over your work who's going to give you really positive feedback in that way, to really help you fine-tune it.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, it should always come back to what you want to say to the world and to yourself.
Mm. Good, good. So
in your writing at the moment and the book that you most recently wrote, were you trying any new techniques with your writing?
I think with the project I've just done, the most challenging thing for me, which was quite new, was to fit so much stuff into such a short word count. The book's only 40,000 words, and British folklore is such a huge topic. I can waffle for hours and hours and hours, as you might have noticed from this interview. You've asked me a simple question. There's never a simple answer. So I might be an interesting person for them to have chosen to say, okay, can you give us a short introduction to British folklore? And it's like, maybe. So it was quite challenging and quite a new thing for me to have to research such a massive topic in what was a relatively short period of time and condense that into an introduction. And I think it was a really amazing experience to have, and there was laughter, there were tears, because, you know, you come across a topic for a chapter and you'd think, I could write the whole book just on this bit. So it was a really fantastic experience as a writer for me to have to whittle that down into the bare bones. And it also felt like a really interesting experience to have to choose what to include, because there's just so much to choose from that it meant really looking at the core themes and seeing what was most important. And then it was quite interesting to have to decide what to put in and what to leave out. And I am kind of expecting riots maybe when the book comes out from a lot of the Folklore Thursday community who have their own pet subjects that they really love that I just couldn't fit in.
I was just wondering that. It must have been heartbreaking to actually have to cut things or you know, not include certain topics.
It was. And there's the old adage about, you know, when you're writing, you have to kill your darlings, which in essence is, you know, take out the bits you love most because you're probably crazy and slightly obsessed with them. And it's so true, because I had a chapter on the folklore of stones, and obviously with a background in archaeology, I could ramble about that for hours and get really boring. You know, I do remember being at a party one night, and when I was at university, and someone came up to me and they asked me a simple question about archaeology, and then I realized 4 hours later, it was like, oh no, they didn't really care. And I thought, they were just being polite. So I thought, right, I've really got to keep a handle on that and not put too much archaeology in and really try and be balanced, and really respect the themes and respect the whole wealth of folklore that there is in Britain. But I know there are going to be some people who are going to be raging, and I can think of names, and you know, I almost wanted to put like a little apology in the introduction. I'm really sorry I couldn't fit X in because such and such has done so much work on that, you know. So yeah, it was an interesting experience, and it was definitely something new for me to not ramble.
Sounds like you're going to need to write an encyclopedia at the back of it to fit in all the rest of the stuff you wanted to talk about.
It's very tempting.
So in terms of what you like in terms of writing, so what writers inspire you?
Well, strangely, I did think about this, and most of the people I came up with are actually fiction. And I know I've written a non-fiction book, but at the beginning, this is a complete tangent. At the beginning of writing the non-fiction book, I was approaching it in quite an academic style, which is not really what they wanted, and it was going to be quite boring. And I was really struggling with that. So my partner, who's been ever supportive, actually said to me, right, why don't you tell all these stories, why don't you tell this like a story? And I thought, you know what, that's so true. Because for me, folklore has so much magic in it that even with the non-fiction, there's magic in there too, and it's not dry and it's not just academic. And I think one writer that really manages to strike that balance was Aubrey Beale, who wrote on archaeological themes and wrote an amazing book about stone circles. And it was actually a field guide to British and Irish stone circles. And they can be so dry. You know, the kind of book you take with you in the car and you stop off at a circle and you find out all the facts. Every section and every site, he took you on such a magical journey into the history and the folklore with that, that it just didn't read like a field guide. And it was amazing. And there was so much magic in that book that I always had that in mind. You know, keep Aubrey Beale in mind as I wrote the book. To keep Aubrey Beale in mind as I was writing the book was a major thing for me, to try and aspire to that level of magic while conveying the facts. Now, a lot of people might not like that style, but again, what I was saying earlier, for me, that was such a magical experience reading that book. So I think I kind of aspired to that as I went through. And I, in terms of fiction, I love kind of like the Philip Pullman stuff and Gaiman and writers, you know, that we might know, like Jackie Morris, also Carrie Anne Noble, obviously. They have such magic in their work that I think it's really important to try and bring that into the mundane world too.
So we've spoken a little bit about maypoles, mandrakes and mistletoe. So what sparked it? Was it a commission job, or where did it originally come from?
It was. The National Trust came to me and said, you know, do I know anyone who could write a book like that? And I thought of a few people, but they were all working on projects and they were busy and had stuff going on. And then I thought, well, do you know what? I could actually write a book like that. So, you know, I wrote back with that response and they were like, yeah, that's great. We're happy for you to do that. That's how it kind of came about.
Fantastic. So, are you working on something new now? Now that that's obvious, is it to bed, or are there still edits and things going on?
Well, yeah, it's kind of hectic at the moment because the editing process is going back and forth. But I am working on something new. At the same time, I can't say too much about that right now. It's still in its very early stages, but do stay tuned to Folklore Thursday to possibly find out more over the coming months. All I can say is it's something I'm really quite excited about. And if you do like folklore, hopefully it's something you might be excited about as well.
Oh, a teaser. All right. Well, I'll wrap up now and let you get back to... You've probably got some edits in your inbox now for you to start working on. So where can people find you and your work?
Okay. Well, obviously one major place will be the infamous Folklore Thursday website, which is www.folklorethursday.com. I mean, I manage that, but also I have my own articles on there if you search for me on there. And you can find me on Twitter at DD Cheney. I do have some of my dark fables on my YouTube channel. So I write short, creepy fables. So there are a few readings of those there. And I also design cushions and bags and stuff like that, and you can find that on Redbubble. So the links to all of those things are in my author bio underneath my articles on the Folklore Thursday website.
Wow, you're quite a busy woman.
I don't know. There's a lot of time looking at Instagram cakes.
Well, you know, you can stitch and look at cakes at the same time. Good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been really fun, and we tried not to go veer off too far into folklore talk, but and stick to writing, but it was really fantastic to have you on. So thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you very much for allowing me on to ramble on about folklore and cakes.
Oh, we love it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, I love it anyway. Thank you. Today's tip is something I've tried every now and then. It's another one which is hugely valuable, but I have to remind myself to do. And so hopefully sharing this tip with you today will get me back into the swing of it. Today's tip is writing down 10 story ideas per day. Now, this idea comes from a startup product development perspective. I think I heard it from business writer and podcaster James Altucher, but I've adapted it for story ideas. Now, some days I'm an absolute fountain of ideas. I can't get out of bed without having 20 thoughts of new projects or see another 20 inspirational things as I walk down the street. As an example from yesterday, I was walking down King Street in Melbourne and I saw a big clump of human hair in the gutter. Now, this absolutely set off my writing spidey senses. Why was it there? What had happened? And so on and so on. Perfect for my 10 ideas per day list. Now, the trick with the writing down 10 ideas per day is that 9 of them will probably be complete crap. But one might have something, a little sparkle for further development. And I do this technique, when I do it, as an automatic free writing exercise, like similar to the morning pages which I mentioned in episode 9, where I force myself to come up with 10 in one sitting. I've got a little blue notebook, or you could probably use Evernote or Google Docs if you're more of an online person. Now, the benefits for me are really getting into the practice of looking for ideas while also having an outlet for the new shiny idea which wants to take over my head and distract me from my current project. Writing it down for me is a way of saying, yes, I've heard you, idea, you are awesome, and I'll come back to you. My list of story ideas is also insurance against that fear that I'll never have another good idea again. So, I hope you give this a try. And talking about the 10 ideas tip has actually convinced me to start doing this again. Thanks for listening to Write Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinediest.com or madeline_diest on Twitter. No apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinediest.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?